regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep their arms shall not infringe. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad that you are with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a nice long weekend like I did, and hopefully your weekend was as good as mine was. Glad to be back behind the microphone. Also glad to be talking to an actual human today, unlike Jim Acosta. We will not be doing any interviews with AI avatars, either pro-gun control or pro-Second Amendment. I like talking to flesh and blood human beings, and we're going to be talking with NRA ILA Executive Director John Comerford about the new lawsuit filed taking on not the NFA in its entirety, but at least the registration scheme for NFA items that we no longer or will no longer have to pay transfer taxes on because of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, a coalition of Second Amendment groups launching a legal challenge to the registration requirements for things like suppressors, short-barreled firearms, any other weapons. We'll talk about the limitations, the scope of this lawsuit with John, but we'll also talk about what the impact of this lawsuit might be. In fact, let's get started. Take a look and a listen. John, thanks so much for your time this morning. It's good to see you, sir.
Cam, always good to be on.
And it is great to talk about another lawsuit that the NRA is involved in to defend and, frankly, claw back some of our Second Amendment rights that have been lost. The NRA, once again, joining with the coalition of Second Amendment groups, which I think is notable and praiseworthy in and of itself, to challenge some of the provisions of the National Firearms Act, right? So what can you tell us about this lawsuit, John?
Yes, so it's Brown versus ATF. It was filed in the Eastern District of Missouri in the Eighth Circuit. And you're right, it is a coalition. It's NRA, it's American Suppressor Association, Second Amendment Foundation, and Firearms Policy Coalition. So again, it really putting a foot forward on all these gun groups to do the right thing, because in the end, we all would have filed probably our own case. I think you saw other gun groups filed a different case with different tactics in the Fifth Circuit. But we chose the Eighth, and we feel confident about the case. The case takes a little bit of a different path than what is already out there, because we do challenge Congress's ability to levy the registration requirements that come with complying with the tax when the One Big Beautiful Bill eliminated the tax. So that's the meat and potatoes of it. But we also have a Second Amendment claim, because there's no historical basis for registering on protected arms. So there's a second component to it as well. But it's a very comprehensive case that has the groups, it has a retailer in the St. Louis metropolitan area and two NRA members.
Okay. Now, I want to understand, I want to make sure that I understand this correctly, that our audience understands this correctly. So this does not challenge the NFA in its entirety, right? This challenges very specifically the registration requirements for these items that are no longer taxed.
That's exactly right. So okay. The Beautiful Bill removed the actual dollar amount for the tax. It took it to $0 for suppressors, short-barreled firearms, and what they define as any other weapons. So that would challenge the validity of the registration and all the other BS that every listener here knows is the actual problem. It's not the tax. It's the process. But it challenges the validity of that, and if Congress can enforce that. We already have an additional challenge out there on SBRs, which has actually been petitioned to the Supreme Court. So they'll decide on that this fall, where NRA's own in-house counsel, Joe Greenlee, is actually one of the attorneys of record on that cert petition. So we're taking multiple bites to try to get this unconstitutional wrong of nearly 100 years fixed.
Absolutely. And it is going to take multiple bites. It's going to take multiple routes. I was talking about this with Mark Walters on Armed American Radio last night. You know, for some folks who might be complaining, well, okay, this isn't just challenging the NFA in its entirety. This doesn't do anything about machine guns. I think that's a separate issue. I mean, I'll be honest with you. And I think, from a political standpoint, I think it's a separate issue. I think it should be a separate issue, because I don't think Congress or the courts are where we want them to be at this point, quite frankly, in trying to, repeal the restrictions and prohibitions on the purchase of, post-87 machine guns, for example. So I think it is smart to do this piecemeal. And this is, I think, the most obvious place to challenge it, right? I mean, we've talked about this on the program before with Representative Andrew Clyde, who said, you know, listen, the registration requirement is essentially a registry of who paid this tax. Well, if the tax is now zero, what is there to register, right? We don't have to pay taxes. So, you know, is this even something that that can be complied with now? I mean, it almost sounds like not only is the common sense position, yes, the registration requirements have to go away, but I mean, almost that it's compulsory, because how can you be forced to register for a tax that you don't have to pay?
You're exactly right. And look, going back to how this came into fruition, if you look at the process on the One Big Beautiful Bill, Andrew Clyde, Chairman Richard Hudson, leadership, they're very supportive to get this done. And unfortunately, we had that unelected parliamentarian. And everything you just talked about, it's complying with the tax. And that's where the frustration mounts with her saying it didn't comply with the Byrd rule. But this is the situation we're in. It's law. The tax is gone as the dollar amount. But you're right. You know, we've actually floated ideas as far as ATF could create an amnesty around these items. They did it for braces. If your listeners remember, I mean, that came out of thin air, and they are statutorily allowed to do amnesties from time to time. So you got to think of our industry partners as well, because while if you know a tax is going from 200 to zero in January, it discourages the purchasing of the item now.
Yeah.
We're working on different solutions for that to help purchasers and the industry to keep these items going. But it is exciting times for the Second Amendment. Let's be clear. I mean, people may not be happy we didn't get everything we got, but the reason we got what we got is because people voted on November 5th. Otherwise, we wouldn't even be talking about this right now. You and I would be in here. I don't have much hair left to lose. And it would be falling out even faster, because we'd be dealing with President Harris and potentially Leader Schumer and Speaker Jeffries. So while we didn't get everything we wanted, it's a hell of a step in the right direction. And we're going to work together with our partners in the Second Amendment space to right this nearly 100-year-old wrong.
Absolutely. And, you know, perspective is important, John. Not only the perspective of, you know, how much worse would things have been if Kamala Harris had been elected, and we were dealing with a Senate Majority Leader Schumer, a Speaker Jeffries. I think it's also important to you know, put into perspective the gains that we have already seen under the Trump administration, right? This is the first, was it everything that gun owners wanted? No. But it is still the first major reform to the National Firearms Act since the National Firearms Act was put in place, essentially, right? At least the first major reform in our direction. That's huge, right?
It's the first decrease in a federal excise tax on firearms since, I believe, the 60s. And people, keep in mind, I mean, look, we catch a lot of flack at NRA. I read the comments out there, and people think we, you know, passed gun control in 1834, but when you get back to the NFA, remember the original intent, they wanted to include handguns in that.
Mm-hmm.
And NRA worked to get rid of that. You mentioned Hughes. You know, NRA sued in court just as NRA said they would after that wrong was put into FOPA. And unfortunately, the Supreme Court declined to hear it. So there are a lot of different possibilities because of where we are. And look at the judiciary. We just had a win in the Rody case, which NRA has funded since its inception. And now it's going to go on bonk. We know how the Ninth Circuit acts and California right. acts. However, judicial openings happen all the time. And having 4 years of President Trump in there and having a pro-gun Senate to confirm his nominees to the courts, we can help reshape this American judiciary for the rest of our generation. And what comes along with that? Second Amendment wins. So it's critically important that people stay engaged, even if we don't get everything we want.
Absolutely. We got to play the long game. Gun control groups are pretty good at playing the long game. I think when you look at that, they've been losing the long game. As you say, in the 1930s, they wanted to include handguns on the National Firearms Act. You look at, you know, Brady's original iteration, which I think was the National Council to ban handguns.
Yep.
You know, 50 years ago, that was the conversation, right? Are we going to yeah. be able to ban handguns? Are we going to be able to do this in Washington, D.C., in Chicago, in the state of Massachusetts? Nobody's having that conversation seriously right now, right? We have moved the ball forward. We have, I think, made it unacceptable from a political, legal, and even cultural standpoint to say, we need to ban handguns, right? That is a victory in and of itself. And as you say, we are building on these victories, whether it's the Heller decision, the Bruin decision, the decisions to come, hopefully dealing with, bans on semi-automatic long guns and other so-called assault weapons. And this is, I think it's an exciting time to be a gun owner. It's an exciting time to be a Second Amendment advocate. We've got a generation, John, of people who have grown up in this sort of post-Heller world, right? And they may take it for granted that, yeah, it's an individual right. Of course it's an individual right. It's an individual right because we fought to ensure that it was recognized as an individual right for decades. And we are building on those successes each and every day. I'm proud to see that NRA is a part of this. Again, I love the fact that you guys are involved in these fights with coalitions and other partners out there. Really appreciate you joining us on the program. Again, this is a brand new lawsuit. So we've got, at least 30 days or so for the DOJ to reply to this lawsuit, right?
Yes. Yeah, this is in its infancy. It's been filed. It was actually filed at 7 p.m. on Friday. We love to file lawsuits on Friday night.
To make us work on the weekends. I know what that is. It's all right. You know what? We're going to make them work.
That's exactly right. But we hope DOJ will weigh in a positive manner. And let's keep an eye on it and see where things go. If people listening, go to NRAILA.org/litigation. And you can see the nearly 50 cases that NRA is involved in.
Absolutely. John Comerford, Executive Director of NRA's Institute for Legislative Action. Thank you, as always, for coming on the program. It's good talking with you today.
Thanks, Cam. Cam, great to be here.
My thanks to John for joining me on the program. Looking forward to having him back again very soon. You know, and again, I mean, this is just part of the NRA's efforts, to reform the organization, quite frankly. And we've talked about this a lot on the program. I'm glad to see this coalition building that the NRA is involved in. And I would encourage you, as a NRA Benefactor Life member, somebody who is working with the organization to try to enact reforms, I'd encourage you, if you've let your membership lapse, now is the time to rejoin. I'm not getting paid to say that. This is not a paid endorsement or anything like that. That is just me speaking as an NRA Benefactor Life member who wants to see this organization as strong as possible. I believe that it is okay to rejoin the family, so to speak, and the more the merrier. So NRA.org is the website. If you would like to rejoin the organization, or maybe even join for the first time, obviously, yes. Big fans of, you know, all of the Second Amendment groups out there. And I would encourage you to belong to all of them. But I do think that the NRA's efforts at reforming and the efforts of people like John Comerford, Doug Hamlin, and others, they need to be recognized and supported by Second Amendment advocates out there around the country. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Fargo, North Dakota. Fargo fatal shooting suspect previously charged with terrorizing and theft. Yeah. And not really terrorism. It sounds like originally he was charged with armed robbery, but he took a plea deal. Anyway, the suspect wanted by police in connection with a fatal shooting in downtown Fargo over the weekend has been under active supervision by the North Dakota Department of Parole and Probation since last October, according to the Grand Forks Herald, after he pleaded guilty to terrorizing after two women accused him of robbing them at gunpoint. Late on Sunday, police issued an alert attempting to locate 20-year-old Tyreek Jones, saying that Jones is suspected of shooting three people shortly before 2 a.m. Sunday, August the 3rd, outside of a nightclub there in Fargo. Police say that 19-year-old Azeem Holmes died in the shooting, two others injured, one critically. Court records, according to the Grand Forks Herald, show that Jones was in the custody of law enforcement as recently as 2 weeks ago when he was briefly booked into the Barnes County Jail after he resisted Fargo officers who were attempting to arrest him on a warrant after a traffic stop. Jail records show that Jones was released the same day after pleading guilty and was put on 5 days of electronic monitoring. The warrant, by the way, was for non-appearances in court for driving under a suspension violation in March. So, I mean, again, you break the law, you get put on probation, you get told not to do things, you don't abide by those terms, or what happens? Nothing. 5 days of electronic monitoring. That's it. A couple hours in jail. According to the Herald, Jones is currently under a one-year period of supervised probation, which is scheduled to end on September the 30th, part of a sentence issued last fall in exchange for a guilty plea on a terrorizing charge, stemming again from an alleged armed robbery on June 27th of 2024, where two women said that Jones had stolen more than $3,000 from them while holding a gun. Security footage obtained by police showed Jones at the location where the women alleged the robbery took place. Jones later admitted to buying marijuana from the women, but denied having a gun and robbing her. He was initially charged with a felony, but it was reduced to a misdemeanor as part of the plea deal. 2023, Jones also pleaded guilty via an Alford plea, meaning that he did not acknowledge his guilt, but did acknowledge that Prosecutors had enough evidence to convict him to a misdemeanor theft charge after a woman reported that her purse was stolen out of her car. Fraudulent charges were made on her bank card at a couple of local businesses there in Fargo. So he's on probation. At the very least, I mean, we can argue about whether or not, you know, this was a good idea for the prosecutors to reduce those charges down. Maybe they had evidentiary issues. Regardless, he's on probation. He's on probation until, what, I believe next September. Violates the terms of those probations, in addition to driving while he apparently had a suspended license. And rather than him serving out the entirety of his sentence, having his probation revoked, no, he got a slap on the wrist. He got a couple of hours in the pokey, 5 days of wearing electronic monitoring, and then he was free and clear, which sounds like you can violate your probation without many consequences at all there in Fargo, North Dakota. On to today's Armed Citizen story. This from Boise, Idaho, where police say a store employee shot an attacker in self-defense. Three people ended up being arrested in this attack, which happened on Saturday night. According to the Boise Police Department, 18-year-old Bailey Giese, facing charges of aggravated assault and first offense criminal or commercial burglary. Junior Antonio Alvarado Hernandez, who's 18, charged with aggravated assault. A minor male suspect also faces an aggravated assault charge. Apparently, the three attacked. Well, they went into it sounds like a convenience store, stole some alcoholic beverages. They were confronted by an employee who told Giese to leave. Giese then allegedly punched that worker in the face, which sparked a, quote, physical altercation. That's when the other two suspects, Hernandez and the minor, entered the store and joined in, on the assault on the employee, who at that point had fallen down to the ground, repeatedly punched, kicked, and stomped while on the ground, according to police. Only then did the employee draw a firearm and shot at the suspects, actually hitting Hernandez. All three suspects then ran from the store and then drove away. The employee taken to a hospital with serious but non-life-threatening injuries. Officers located a vehicle matching the suspect description nearby, conducted a traffic stop. All three suspects were found inside. Hernandez received medical treatment for a single gunshot wound before he was transported to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. At last report, the two adults are in the Ada County Jail, the juvenile in the Ada County Juvenile Detention Center. The employee who defended themselves, not facing any charges, hopefully won't lose their job because they defended themselves on the clock. But we'll keep our eyes open for any additional information and bring you those details as they become available. Finally, today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A good Samaritan who came to a woman's rescue after she was attacked by a man who was allegedly impersonating a police officer. This was in the state of Kansas, Lawrence, Kansas. This was last Thursday. Officers responded to a call just before midnight. They found two men fighting inside a woman's apartment. The woman didn't know either of them. One of the men had the other held down. Once officers were able to de-escalate the scene, they gained control of the situation. They spoke separately to the three people. It became clear that the guy who was being held down was the original aggressor in this incident. The woman said she never met either man, but she said the guy who was being held down broke into the apartment through a window, told the woman he was a police officer, said she needed to get her purse, and then attacked her. Another man heard what was going on from outside. He, too, came through the open window, ended up holding the attacker down, told the woman to call for help. The suspect eventually booked into the Douglas County Jail after being checked out at a hospital, where he's also suspected, by the way, of battering a hotel employee. Lauren Dale Partridge, age 40, has now been charged with aggravated robbery and attempted aggravated burglary, sexual battery, and battery. According to the local paper there, Partridge has numerous convictions in Douglas County and Johnson County for burglary, theft, and other offenses. He has been previously incarcerated in the Department of Corrections. He's also been the subject of dozens of disciplinary reports while in prison going back to 2006. This guy could have done serious harm to this woman. And if it were not for the Good Samaritan, who heard what was going on, and then I guess saw what was going on and came to that woman's aid, the situation could have turned out very differently. So we don't know any details about that Good Samaritan, other than he did help ensure that the suspect taken into custody. But whoever you are, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, we thank you for your very, very good deed. Also want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. And don't forget, on Wednesdays, we do our weekly VIP Gold live chat for our VIP Gold and VIP Platinum members. Hot Air, Ed Morrissey, myself sitting down 1:30 Eastern. Occasionally, we'll even do an after show. We did that the last week. I don't know if we're going to have time to do it this Wednesday, but we'd love to have you a part of the live chat. All you have to do is subscribe to Bearing Arms VIP. Become a VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT. You can get 60% off your membership. Not only will you have access to the live chats if you're a VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member, but you'll have all kinds of other great benefits as well. And we certainly do appreciate your support. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.